Good morning, everybody. You know, I'm very happy to be here. So I want to give a kind of a quick introduction. So everybody who's looking at me right now, you would say that I look Chinese. So I want to first ask everybody, have you ever heard the term banana? Okay, so Pam is nodding her head. Maybe she knows. So I am what most people refer to as a banana. And what does that mean? That means I am yellow on the outside, but I'm white on the inside. Okay, so that means that I was born and raised in the U.S. I was originally born and raised in Atlanta, Georgia. So I'm a Southerner. But since I graduated from Georgia Tech and started working, I've been traveling all over the world, and I find myself spending most of my time in China, because those are where the opportunities are. And over the last 20 years, I've basically become fluent in Mandarin Chinese. And because my father was a professor of physics at Georgia State University, I also kind of got the teaching bug. So I also started teaching at different universities around the world. In fact, when I was in China, I was a lecturer at two of the universities in Shanghai where I was living. Okay, so now I can see that most of you probably don't know a lot about the Chinese consumer or the Chinese culture, but you hear a lot about China in the news, especially now with the coronavirus, and now we have this travel restrictions and we have the trade war, tons of stuff going on with China, but that shouldn't affect how we do business as individuals. And for multi-level marketing, there are huge opportunities in China, and what I'm going to do today is I'm going to kind of hopefully give you an idea why the opportunities are huge, other than there's 1.4 billion people in China, but also why this type of business actually fits quite well with the Chinese desire to be involved with some entrepreneurship or owning their own business and earning commissions and making money. In fact, I've been to the Amway kind of facility in Shanghai. I was invited there. They gave me a tour. It is amazing. So, and the good thing with China is it doesn't matter if somebody's already there and they're successful. That just proves that there's a market. And everybody who goes in afterwards can also carve out their own niche. So I wouldn't really worry about that. Other competitors or other companies are already there. Kwang Su asked me to, I was actually just going to do Q&A because that's where I think I'm best. But Kwang Su said, you know, this group really doesn't know anything. So if you could prepare kind of like a small presentation, that'll help trigger some ideas of what questions that people may want to ask. So what I'm going to do is I prepared a very short kind of overview. So I'm going to share my screen and then just kind of go over kind of a presentation real quick. All right, so let's see. All right, I'm assuming that everybody is now seeing my PowerPoint. Okay, I see thumbs up. Thank you, John. All right, so what I'm going to do today is I'm going to give everybody a quick introduction of the Chinese consumer mindset. Okay, so when you're doing what I call relationship marketing, you're introducing products, yes, you're introducing things that they should find a value, but ultimately you have to understand that behind introducing good products, there's also a business. So you want to understand, how do I develop relationships with people in China that I want to be, that I want to ask to join part of my team? So what I'm going to go over today is things to consider for a winning approach for relationship marketing. And again, I'm going really, really basic, just to give you guys all an overview, because I'm assuming that you guys really have not traveled to China. You don't have a lot of friends from mainland China, but you're meeting a couple now and you're starting to have some conversations, and you really want to know, well, what do they value and how do they think? And that's what we're going to try to accomplish today. Okay, so I'm going to do this in two ways. First is the big kind of broad overview. We call this kind of like understanding the Chinese consumer mindset in the macro. Okay, so let's just get that out of the way first. So what are some of the characteristics of the Chinese consumer mindset? Well, one is Chinese have a very what's called herd mentality. And this is perfect for the business that you're in, because it may take a little bit of work and a little bit of patience to get the business going. But once it starts going, there's a herd mentality. Once people see that somebody's making money, then everybody's going to want to join. Okay. So the general rule of thumb in China when doing something similar to what you guys are trying to do is that it's going to require some additional investment in time and patience in the beginning. But if you can get some momentum going, the Chinese consumer mindset follows really a herd mentality. That means as soon as one, let's say a housewife, she gets involved in the business and she's starting to see the benefits of using the products and she's making money, then all of her peers are going to want to know what's going on. And it's going to be really easy for her to convince her next level of people to be involved in this business. Now, that being said, getting over that first hump, those initial negotiations, all of the requests at the beginning, those are going to be the challenges. And this is where everybody who does business in China, no matter what business it is, whether it's, I mean, even if you're like Apple going to China trying to sell iPhones, you still have to be patient. The second thing to keep in mind, because you're going to start communicating with a lot of Chinese people on a very personal level. So it's important to understand that there's the Chinese consumer mindset, there's always an undercurrent of Chinese nationalism. Okay, so what does that mean from a practical business relationship building standpoint? It just means if you hear them say something that you disagree with or find offensive, just nod your head and let it go. And don't get into a debate about the trade war, about tariffs, about anything that's going on, especially with the new coronavirus. So for example, the U.S. just suspended all flights to and from China. That just happened yesterday. From the Chinese point of view, that was an overreaction. So if you are currently working with somebody in China trying to get this set up, they may ask you, hey, what do you think about this travel ban? We're not going to be able to come visit you. You're not going to be able to come visit us. Those are landmines. So you got to understand how to avoid stepping on a landmine when the conversation seems kind of very innocent. And so you always want to keep in mind that there's an undercurrent of nationalism in the Chinese consumer mindset. And again, we're talking about macro now. So in the macro, the other thing that you also have to really keep in mind is what I call political correctness or Chinese political correctness. And you're going to see a lot about this in the news. There's a lot of books written about it. But basically, if you unintentionally say something that kind of disrespects China or kind of violates their perception of their national sovereignty, you're going to receive either a backlash or a ban or a blacklist. So this is very serious. Okay, and I'm going to give you an example. The example is when the NBA was playing its preseason games in Shanghai, Daryl Morey, the general manager of the Houston Rockets, tweeted a message in support of the Hong Kong protesters. Okay, that was really disrespectful for Yao Ming, who was a former Houston Rocket, who is also the president of NBA China. Make a long story short, immediately after a tweet, all NBA games in China were taken off the air, and all sponsors of the NBA in China immediately suspended their relationships. And what you see in the picture of the background is the next day, all of the posters that were promoting NBA in China, they were immediately removed. Okay, so if you violate Chinese political correctness, depending on the scale of your influence, there could be an immediate backlash, ban, or blacklist. And that's what happened to the NBA. All right. So this Chinese political correctness is something that you also always have to keep in mind when you're talking to people in China. Okay. So that was the macro. What we want to do now is talk about what do Chinese value in the micro. Okay. So this is like individual, one-to-one, when you're talking to somebody, when you're introducing something, when you're building that relationship, what do they value? Okay. So it's not really hard to imagine that people value their culture. Okay. So this goes for everybody. We Americans value our culture. So Chinese naturally should value their culture. But the problem is their culture has different habits, different norms, and the final one, which is really important, has different expectations. Okay. So when you're trying to sell something, when you're doing marketing, you're trying to do that, the rule of thumb is always to exceed expectations, and then you're going to get the business. But if you don't understand Chinese culture and what their expectations are, just meeting expectations, not disappointing people, becomes a challenge. Okay, so understanding Chinese habits, culture, and norms will help you. Also, you want to understand what the Chinese mindset is. And this is where I think there are huge opportunities for Isagenix in China, is because there's a quote that says, to get rich is glorious. Okay, so this is a myth, actually. But everybody believes that when China opened up to the rest of the world in the 1980s, in 1980 or 1979, whatever date, Deng Xiaoping, who was then the leader of China, said, to get rich is glorious, because traditionally China was a very, agricultural, agrarian, communist kind of like culture. Everybody was like farmers and workers and peasants. And what they wanted to do is they wanted people to start moving into kind of a more economy-driven mindset. So somehow somebody attributed this quote to Deng Xiaoping, that to get rich is glorious. It's actually a myth, but what that myth has created is now you have kind of 40 years of Chinese people thinking that the number one thing in the world I should do is to get rich. So it's actually kind of been perverted, where Chinese people are now not really seeing as much the value of family and friends and church and whatever religion you practice. It's just suddenly everybody is just focused on money. Okay, so for our business or for your business, that's both a good thing and a bad thing. But that's part of the Chinese mindset. Okay, but that may not be ahead of Chinese culture as far as what people value. So you got to kind of gauge the individual to see what priorities they have. But in general, they value, of course, their own culture. They value money. That's part of the Chinese mindset. But there's another thing that they value, and this is how you appeal to people's emotions, is Chinese people, you hear a lot about the giving and receiving of face in China. In Chinese, we call it mianzi. So Chinese people value their face, which means that they if you disrespect them, the repercussions or the backlash could be disproportionate to what you would expect if you said something similar to a friend here in the U.S. Okay, so paying attention to giving and receiving face is really important. So this is kind of a high-level overview on an individual level, what Chinese people value. They value their culture. They value whatever their mindset is. And this is natural, because people are people, and psychologically, they value what they value. And of course, Chinese people comparatively are more emotional. So they value their face. They don't like to be disrespected. They need to be given their respect. So, and sometimes, and we can't get into this now, but the way that Chinese people speak and the Chinese people behave, sometimes if you disrespected them, you may not know it immediately, but you'll see it when they cancel your business. And sometimes you'll see it even worse when they start spreading rumors and trying to hurt you when, you know, once you've gone. So this is why a lot of American businesses or a lot of foreign businesses believe that Chinese businesses are actually, a lot of their behavior is corrupt and unethical. It's actually not. It's just what happens is, you've probably disrespected them and not given them face. So their only way to kind of get even is to do something that you would consider corrupt or unethical. So it's a cycle that's perpetuated by American business people going to China who actually don't understand how to do business in China. And then it creates this false narrative that Chinese people are unethical and corrupt. Okay. It's not as simple as that, but that's as detailed as I can go in this kind of short overview. So your key to success is to appeal to all three without violating Chinese political correctness. Okay. Be mindful of their culture, be mindful of their mindset, be mindful of their emotions. Try to appeal to all three without violating any type of Chinese political correctness. Okay, so that is really the key to how you communicate and work with your counterparts, your affiliates, your partners in China. All right. One thing to keep in mind, and this is the challenge that most Westerners have when they go to China, is you can teach them things about Chinese culture, but they're still not going to be able to really find the right approach to being successful because perceptions are always misleading. And people who go to China are going to find that China is a land of contradictions. Okay, that means, hey, didn't you tell me that Chinese value this or Chinese are conservative? That's not what I see. Well, yes, because China is a land of contradictions. It really depends on the context of what you're talking about and the relationship and the hierarchical relationship between you and the person you're talking about, depending on how they're going to behave. So let me give you some examples. So relative to your business, Chinese people will do two things kind of simultaneously. Okay, they're going to show strong support for their local and national brands. So for example, when the U.S. banned U.S. companies from working with Huawei, the Chinese, you know, 5G network infrastructure provider, and they create mobile phones, they're the number two in volume behind Samsung as far as how many mobile devices they sell. When they banned Google from allowing Huawei to install the Android operating system, now suddenly you have Huawei phones that couldn't operate, couldn't get in access any of the Google apps. What has happened since that ban is that the number of Huawei phones sold has actually increased because the Chinese consumer, which is 1.4 billion people, they started saying, wow, the U.S. is really bullying our companies, so we're going to make sure they don't lose because of what the U.S. has done. Okay, so Huawei, since the Trump administration announced a ban on doing business with them, have actually grown in unit volume sales of mobile devices, even without access to Android, Google Play, and the apps, Google App Store. Okay. Now, why is it a land of contradiction? Because when you talk to Chinese people, they're going to express distrust for local Chinese brands. They'll say, yeah, I can remember this. They will say, yeah, the Chinese phones, they're really not really that great of quality. You know, now obviously that's changed now. The quality continues to improve, but you're going to hear Chinese people when you're in a one-on-one conversation talk negatively about Chinese brands. But externally, they're going to show strong support. So you're going to say, wow, that's a contradiction. And yes, it is. And that's the point. China is a land of contradictions. The key for you is to never criticize Chinese brands, even though you may agree with them. Yes, Chinese food products may have a higher risk of health issues. Well, you don't need to say that. Just let them say that. All right, another example is, so Chinese will seek out foreign brands because there's a higher level of trust with foreign brands, but the way they talk about foreign brands, especially with foreigners, is they're going to show a lot of discontent and anger. But emotionally, they're going to want the foreign brands. But the way they speak, you wouldn't know it. So this is where you have to be aware that China is a land of contradictions. And I always tell my clients, when you go to China and you start working with Chinese people, you always want to assume that Chinese people don't say what they mean and they don't mean what they say. But that's actually a good thing. Okay. Don't take that as a negative. Don't take that as Chinese are liars or untrustworthy. It's just cultural. Okay. And once you adjust your attitude to be more positive, that's going to help you create a lot more reciprocity, especially when it comes to the third emotional element of what Chinese value, and that is the giving and receiving of face. Only you can only do that when you have a positive attitude. And if you have a negative attitude, you say, oh man, I can't really stand Chinese people because they're so untrustworthy. If you have that attitude, you're not going to be able to create those long-term relationships. All right. And the thing to keep in mind from a business standpoint is because of these contradictions, Chinese people will have a tendency to have higher expectations. Again, this is the cultural element. And a lot of times, their expectations are going to be unreasonable. Okay? You should expect that. When you get an unreasonable request, don't say no. Don't say no. Don't say, I can't do that. So don't say, we don't do this with any of our other affiliates. Nobody ever asked for that. Just say you'll think about it. Because they're actually not asking for a yes or no. They're asking you just to acknowledge that they've asked for it. Okay? Communicating effectively with Chinese people is very, very tricky. I could give you some tips and some tricks, but ultimately you're not going to really know how to behave without practice and without patience. All right? To give you a little bit of background on the cultural origins of these contradictions that I talked about. One of them is, you know, in American culture, the way we perceive time is linear. Okay. Today I got to do this. Tomorrow I got to do that. The shortest path from here to there is just to go from A to B, from B to C, and C to D, and then I achieve my goal. Everything is kind of like a linear progression. That's how we think. We need to do step one before we do step two. We need to do step two before we can move on to step three. Chinese don't think like that. Chinese culture of time is circular. Okay, that means there is no sequence, rhyme, or rhythm to when they want to do what. Okay, it's almost like you're Star Trek and you're meeting an alien race that doesn't speak, not only doesn't speak your language, but everything is just completely backwards. I call it a bizarro world. Okay. It's like the bizarro Superman. Everything is opposite. So this is the cultural origin of why a lot of people complain that when I talk to Chinese people, I can't seem to get a straight answer. It seems like it's just a circular conversation. Well, the thing to understand is that the Chinese view of time or perception of time is circular versus where we think in a linear way. And that's why it's so difficult to fit a square peg into a round hole, because we're not talking even in the same time signature. This is just something cultural to keep in mind when you start having a frustrating conversation where they seem to be asking questions and you're saying, well, whoa, whoa, we're not really there yet. Let's focus on this first. Okay, you're going to experience that, and this is the reason why it's cultural. The other thing is that truth is relative. Okay, so what does that mean? That means that in American culture, we think in more in terms of absolute truth, where we say it's either right or it's wrong. It's either true or it's false. Okay, it's either yes or it's no. But in Chinese culture, truth is relative, and because truth is relative, Westerners or foreigners sometimes have a perception that Chinese people have a real difficult time with truth. But from the Chinese point of view, truth is relative to something else, which means that in absolute terms, it could be literally false, but in relative terms, well, it may not be false. It may be true. Okay? That's the thing to always keep in mind, that Chinese people think in terms of relative truths. not absolute truths. So be very cautious not to get into a debate with somebody of, you know, did you say that or didn't you say that? You know, did you agree or did you not agree? Everything is, from the Chinese point of view, is a matter of context. All right. The final thing that I want to share with everybody, because I don't want to go too long in presentation mode, is that when you start building relationships with Chinese people, whether you travel there or you're on the phone or you meet somebody online or you're introduced to somebody, there's always a honeymoon period. Okay. Don't be deceived. Honeymoon period is just the Chinese cultural way that when I meet somebody new, I want to exchange a lot of goodwill and reciprocity. I want to give a lot of face. So during the honeymoon period, which could be as short as a day or could be as long as 3 months, during the honeymoon period, Chinese people will have a tendency to tell you what you want to hear and agree with everything that you say. Okay, that's only during the honeymoon period. And that's why I say Chinese people don't say what they mean, they don't mean what they say, depending on the context relative to what the situation is, how long have we known each other, how far are we are in our negotiations. Their behavior and what the way they communicate may be different, but whenever you meet somebody for the very first time, and that first initial period of forming, storming, norming, and conforming, of building that relationship, there's always this honeymoon period. And what happens with most foreigners doing business in China is they're surprised when the honeymoon period ends and suddenly all these problems are starting to come up. All these issues need to be solved. All of these complaints and all of these things are coming up. That happens after the honeymoon period. The way to prevent those sudden, unexpected disappointments, I call them China leadership dilemmas, is to be aware that nobody is saying what they mean or meaning what they say during this honeymoon period. Okay, and when you start building your relationships in China, things are going to be easy in the beginning. They're going to get hard in the end. You just have to be aware that this is a phenomenon that everybody, every foreigner doing business with China experiences, and they call it the honeymoon period. Or I call it the honeymoon period. All right, so that's it for the short overview. I didn't want to go too long. That's just what I could come up with in as far as an introduction to